the next half hour, I'll be reading from Buffalo Rising on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. This story is in the bars and restaurants section, titled 617 Main, served up with some 716 soul. Buffalo's food hall, bar, and entertainment venue. When restaurateur Mark Supples took over the downtown bazaar location at 617 Main Street, he did so because he knew that it was of utmost importance to save. Having an operational stable of international cuisine vendors under one roof was just too good to simply let go. The result was International House Buffalo. That was in the spring of 2025. Whether Supples initially intended to operate International House for the long run or not remains unclear. What is clear is that after a year or so of getting the multicultural food hall back up to speed, he opted to hand it off to another set of operators, Simone Brown and her husband, Dez. Dez told me that he received a call from Mark not too long ago, saying that he felt that Simone and Dez would be his first choice to take over the operation. After careful consideration, that phone call became a prophetic calling card. "Dez bought me the business as a wedding present," said Simone, laughing. "He told me, 'I have your wedding present figured out.'" "Mark has been a family friend for years. We had been loyal patrons of his restaurant Mother's," added Dez. "He was ready to turn International House over. So we got busy and signed a 9-year lease with Sinatra. We got our liquor license last Thursday, the same day as our rehearsal dinner. We got married on Friday. And now we're off to our honeymoon in Spain. It was important to all parties that the food hall not shutter for a moment. There was too much at risk, since it was almost fully occupied. The only real difference, food-wise, is that the owner of La Divina Tacos vacated so that she could concentrate on her other restaurant on Delaware Avenue. In its place is Evelina's Kitchen, owned and operated by Yvetta Applewhite. It's a mix of Caribbean and Southern flavors, along with soups and sandwiches. Others in the vendor lineup are as follows: So's Kitchen, which is Japanese food; Pinoy Boy, which features Filipino cuisine; Abyssinia Ethiopian; Pattaya Street Food; and 617 Main Kitchen and Bar, which is operated by Simone and Dez. "We didn't want to change it too much from the successful business recipe that was already established," Simone and Dez told me. "Mark will act as an advisor for the time being. The place was just about turnkey. We took out the ping pong tables in the back and turned that area into a rentable event space for Bill's games, special occasions, or even family dinners. Parties can order catering packages from any of the restaurants, including the 617 Main Bar for drinks and food, like a lychee martini or chicken nuggets with creme fraiche and caviar." When I asked the couple if they had any new ideas for drumming up business, they eagerly nodded yes. "We're going to have corporate happy hours and catering packages, late nights for theater groups, comedy shows, live music, and spoken word. We will give theatergoers special cocktails if they show up with their playbills. We've asked our vendors to have extended hours. Our bar will have a late night menu. There will be fun offerings like the girl dinner, a salad and a side of fries, and DJ nights, industry nights, and Sunday brunches too." Along with operating 617 Main, Simone owns her own payroll company. As for Dez, he owns his own security company. He's also spent time in the Marine Corps and is retired due to an injury from the Buffalo Fire and Police. Therefore, the couple will be offering discounts to first responders and military personnel. Simone and Dez are both from Buffalo and feel that they are now doing their part to add something great to the heart of downtown. They are excited to generate a new energy and vibe for the theater district. The goal is to infuse 617 Main with some 716 soul. "Mark was passionate about keeping the place open," said Dez. "He did his job. Now we're ready for the next chapter, with incredible offerings of international cuisine, longer hours, and lots more reasons to visit downtown. We're dedicated in this concept, and we've assembled a seasoned team to help us make 617 Main a household name in Buffalo." Art News ranks AKG Art Museum number 11 best art museum in the United States. Art News, widely considered one of the oldest and most respected art publications in the world, has ranked the Buffalo AKG Art Museum as the 11th best art museum in the nation. The publication ranked the top 30 art museums, with the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York coming in at the top slot. The impeccable ranking attributes many of the gallery's assets, including the recent expansions of its contemporary art collections, as well as the doubling of its footprint, thanks to the addition of the Jeffrey E. Gundlach Building. It would be interesting to see where this ranking would have placed the AKG without the addition of the new building, which has obviously garnered significant accolades, esteem, and momentum since opening. In 2023, Art News published the article A Haven for Modern Art in Buffalo Returns, Doubling in Size and Ambition. This well-deserved ranking is a nice little follow-up to that gushing expansion review. Here's a feature, it's a continued series called How to Take a Walk in Buffalo and Beyond. This feature, this title is Bowling Alone, Not in Western New York. We continue the series on walking Buffalo from the intrepid couple who began walking every day, no matter the weather, in the early years of COVID. They think, without being systematic, that they walked every street in Buffalo and many in other cities and towns, taking over 30,000 photos shared in this series. Today's photo essay is called Bowling Alone, Not in Western New York. Walking can teach you a lot about your community, but it is a partial lens at best, and sometimes a misleading one. Our first experience of bowling as walkers was powerful. We had been walking the Near East Side, the area where Fillmore dangles down into Main Street. There, just east of Main on Amherst Street, we came upon the Amherst Bowling Center, or what remained of it, a vision not entirely unlike discovering the half-buried Statue of Liberty on a sandy beach in 1968's Planet of the Apes. That was 6 years ago. Constructed in 1946, the Amherst Bowling Center was expanded in the 1950s, became vacant in about 2005, and was demolished in December 2025, according to accounts we've read, accompanied by photos. The Bennett High School bowling team met there on Fridays after school. This past May, we found ourselves on Kenmore Avenue, the other Kenmore, between Elmwood Avenue and Military Road, a bleak, treeless strip occupied by what is sometimes euphemistically referred to as light industry. And there's a photo of a cinder block, one-story building in some level of decay with a green awning on it. And it says, across the street from that green awning, an abandoned car, was Kenmore Lanes, occupying several hundred feet of frontage, its modernist facade, signs, and entrances, battered and bruised by time and neglect. It was a Monday afternoon when this photo was taken, and the large parking lots at either end were empty. A sign high up in the building's east side spoke of better days. And it's a sign that's battered, but you can still read it. It says, Kenmore Lanes for the best in bowling. 32 automatic lanes. Restaurant, lounge, coffee shop. More on Kenmore Lanes later. Based on those encounters with Amherst Bowling Center and Kenmore Lanes, I decided to write about bowling alleys for this series. I had my narrative, Decline and Decay. I ordered Robert D. Putnam's best-selling Bowling Alone, knowing I would find evidence to support my thesis that bowling had been and was in steep and deep decline in Western New York and elsewhere since its heyday in the post-war era. Here's the first thing I read. Virtually alone among major sports, only bowling has come close to holding its own in recent years. Bowling is the most popular competitive sport in America. Bowlers outnumber joggers, golfers, or softball players more than 2-1. Soccer players, including kids, by more than 3-1. And tennis players or skiers by 4-1. So bowling was alive and well, at least as of 2000. Or was it? As Putnam explains, one aspect of bowling was in decline, league bowling, the civic form of bowling, one that tended to bring together people from different social economic groups, ethnicities, and neighborhoods. Like other such civic activities that generated what Putnam calls social capital, card parties, picnics, bar cliques, clubs of all kinds, bowling leagues had proliferated in the immediate post-war era. Recall that the Amherst Bowling Center was built in 1946, and note the automatic pin setter was invented and first deployed in Buffalo in the same year, 1946. The leagues were an aspect of the boom in community spirit that accompanied and spilled over from the Second World War. According to Putnam, the decline in league bowling was so severe in the 1990s that had it continued at the same rate, it would have vanished entirely by 2010. a new post-civic generation, the baby boomers, born from between 1946 and 1964, grew up and their children more individualistic, more likely to stay at home and watch TV, more likely to be sports spectator rather than participant, more likely to bowl now and then with family or a few friends rather than regularly in a league. And that made a difference to bowling alleys, because league bowlers drink more beer and eat more pizza than non-league bowlers. And that, according to Putnam, is where the alleys make their money. Bowling alleys also were damaged by the ban on smoking in nearly all indoor public spaces that went into effect in mid-2003 with the New York State's Clean Indoor Air Act. And the COVID-19 pandemic closed bowling alleys as it did bars, restaurants, and other places where people gathered. Although Putnam's description of bowling's history is mixed, we weren't wrong to draw some dire conclusions from the bowling alleys or former alleys that we observed on our walks. Recchio's Lanes on South Park Avenue, owned by the Recchio family from 1946 to 2011, was for decades a center of the local community. Located adjacent to Perfect Shot Sports Bar, the alleys were recently operated as five-star lanes. If you shop at Wegmans on Amherst Street, you've seen Volkers go from a Buffalo institution, closed in May 2021, to a vacant lot, demolished March of 2025. A small bowling alley, maybe eight lanes, is now lit but unused. A phantom trapped inside the Christmas store, one of the few remaining businesses in what was the thriving Eastern Hills Mall. The site of what was once Arrow Lanes on Great Arrow Avenue is now Tapestry Charter School. Strikes, Spares, and Misses, one of three local TV programs featuring bowling, originated at Arrow Lanes. The others were Bowling for Dollars and Beat the Champ. The latter was filmed at Thruway Lanes and hosted by Channel 4's Chuck Healy. The Broadway Auditorium, which is now the Broadway Barn, hosted major bowling events. Rockmore Bowling Center, founded in 1955 on Amherst Street, occupied a lovely modern building in what is now the Tops Plaza. Schiller Park Lanes, opened and operated by the Malwitz family, is gone. The Old Pink had one lane. Bailey Bowling Academy on the corner of Bailey and Ardmore is now Hair World. There was a Bowlerdrome on the southwest corner of Fillmore at Kensington Avenue. The National Bowling Store at Budwee's, which is Budwee's Plaza in North Tonawanda, carries everything bowling, including reconditioned and retro bowling balls. We were there in January 2021, getting COVID-19 shots at the Wurlitzer Pharmacy next door. We thought long and hard and decided to take a look at Classic Lanes on Military Road. Open every day, its roster of Fall 2026 leagues includes Full Throttle Ladies and Old and Restless, which is a senior league. An hour later, after touring a mobile home park just to the south and discovering a rare Ukrainian church on Elmwood Avenue, we returned to the Classic Lanes parking lot that now had dozens of cars, auguring well. The entrance to Classic Lanes makes the facade of Kenmore Lanes look like the Taj Mahal. Amazing Fantasy Fest will screen 106 films, with 36 of them produced in Western New York. The Amazing Fantasy Fest, AAF, was created by cult filmmaker Gregory Lamberson. That was in September of 2024. Since that time, Lamberson has been building up the momentum for this film festival to a point where it is now breaking new grounds for regional filmdom. In 2026, Amazing Fantasy Fest will screen 106 films, with 36 of them produced right here in Western New York. Film genres will include horror, science fiction, fantasy, action, comedy, animation, and experimental. Altogether, there will be 15 features and 91 shorts screened at Dipson's Amherst Theater from Friday, September 11th to Thursday, September 17th. "We screen all types of local films in all styles," said Lamberson. "Our seven-day schedule gives us the flexibility to devote extra time to local artists." Full festival fantasy passes are available for purchase only at the Amherst Theater box office for $80. That'll be $60 for students and seniors. Day passes will be available at the box office when the festival begins for $30 on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, or $20 for the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday admissions. Regular admission for individual blocks is $15, or $10 for matinees before 5 p.m. And all these passes will be available online at DipsonTheaters.com beginning on September 1st. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from Buffalo Rising on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Here's a story titled, Fare Thee Well, Hans the Carver. Hans Christian Mann packed an extraordinary amount of life into just 46 years. Known to many around Western New York as Hans the Carver, Mann was a Great Lakes charter captain, elite multi-species angler, entrepreneur, lore maker, jaw-dropping artist, devoted family man, and the kind of friend who seemed to make every gathering bigger and every adventure more memorable. A Buffalo State alumnus and college football offensive lineman, Hans was one of those rare people who didn't merely become interested in something. He studied it, explored it, experimented with it, and eventually became exceptional at almost everything he did. Nowhere was that more apparent than on the water. Hans possessed an almost encyclopedic understanding of the Great Lakes and Western New York fisheries. As a charter captain, he wasn't simply good at catching one species of fish. He could find and catch nearly everything that swam in these waters. His curiosity also made him an innovator. Hans helped fund and found Red October baits, and later created Carver baits, designing musky lures that became trusted tools for serious anglers throughout the country. He was part of a group of Western New York anglers who helped develop a technique that changed the way muskies were pursued on the Niagara River. But Hans's most remarkable legacy may ultimately be his artwork. Around 2015, he began carving wooden fish replicas. In typical Hans fashion, he didn't stay a beginner for very long. He became astonishingly good, then world class. His carvings weren't simply replicas. They captured the anatomy, the coloration, movement, and personality of the fish themselves. Hans understood fish in a way few artists ever could because he had spent thousands of hours observing, catching, and studying the environments in which they lived. Hans is widely regarded as one of the finest fish carvers in the world, and he did all of his carving right here in Western New York. A 46-inch tiger muskie he carved hangs prominently inside Pearl Street Grill and Brewery. It is beautiful, but it is also part of a much larger body of work that deserves to be preserved and seen. Someday Buffalo should bring those pieces together for a proper gallery exhibition celebrating Hans Mann as a Western New York artist. His work deserves it. Yet, for all his accomplishments, those aren't necessarily what his friends will remember most. Hans was hilarious. He could take an ordinary story and have a room full of people crying with laughter. He threw legendary Memorial Day parties. He showed up for people. If you had a problem, Hans wanted to help solve it. If he found success, he wanted to bring others along. Most importantly, he loved his wife, Elizabeth, and their children, Willie and Dee Dee, his parents and his sister, Lizelle. He was a deeply devoted family man. Somehow, though, Hans' definition of family seemed big enough to include an enormous collection of friends. Hans' story is a Buffalo story. He was blue-collar, but an artist and creator, a craftsman, an innovator, an outdoorsman, and a community man, an expert, and a curious beginner, all in one. There is a lesson in the way Hans lived. Throw the party. Go fishing. Explore the places where you live. Be curious. Create things. Help solve other people's problems. Bring people together. And make the memories big. Hans Mann did Buffalo proud, and he will be missed by many. Launch of Buffalo City in a Park Collaborative. A new initiative dedicated to restoring Buffalo's historic vision as a connected city of parks, parkways, and thriving neighborhoods. The Buffalo City in a Park Collaborative was recently founded by Candace Moppins, Reverend Steve Lane, Jim Gordon, and Marsha LaDiana, former board members of Eastside Parkways Coalition. This newly formed group has embarked upon an urbanist initiative that intends to change the face of Buffalo again. For decades, we lost our way when it came to stewarding original plans that were formulated by the likes of city planner Joseph Ellicott and landscape architect Frederick Law Olmsted. Now, this determined collaborative intends to right the wrongs that continue to plague our neighborhoods. The initiative will develop strategies that revolve around best practice urban design, environmental stewardship, and community healing measures, which can then be embraced by the community as a whole. Through public dialogue and community-driven advocacy, the Buffalo City and a Park Collaborative will fight for the restoration of Buffalo's historic landscape and the reconnection of neighborhoods divided by highway infrastructure. Buffalo was designed to be a city where people, neighborhoods, and nature were interconnected, said the founders of the collaborative. We believe that vision remains relevant today. By reconnecting communities, restoring parkways and green spaces, and investing in neighborhoods, we can create a healthier, more equitable, and more prosperous Buffalo. The Buffalo City and a Park Collaborative will focus on several interconnected priorities: reconnecting neighborhoods separated by highway infrastructure, supporting restoration of the Olmsted Parks and Parkways, advocating for the renewal of Buffalo's historic street network, promoting public education and community engagement around Buffalo's built and natural environment, encouraging public investment that advances environmental justice, public health, and neighborhood revitalization. Moving forward, the collaborative will engage with residents, neighborhood organizations, faith communities, businesses, institutions, and civic leaders to formulate a blueprint that can be used to heal this city's many scars caused by catastrophic urban renewal efforts of the 1920s through 1960s. Buffalo's future depends upon our ability to think beyond division and work together toward a shared vision, the group said. We are building this collaborative because we believe our city's greatest strength has always been its people and the communities they create together. Further details on membership, partnerships, and upcoming initiatives will be released in coming weeks. Season finale of the District Live Concert will feature Nerds Gone Wild on August 28, 2026 from 6 to 9 p.m. Get ready for the final District Live Concert of the summer. This coming Friday, August 28th, Nerds Gone Wild will take over the street party starting at 6 p.m. This is the last hurrah and is anticipated to be one of the biggest end-of-summer bashes with one of the city's favorite party bands. Enjoy the tastes of tapo in the street at the Ellicott Street Outdoor Cafe. Dance your booty off with the Nerds and your friends at Tapo. Nerds Gone Wild bring a high-energy, genre-spanning set packed with pop, rock, and throwback hits to the District Live Concert Series. Known for their fun, interactive style and crowd-first approach, this is a night built for nonstop entertainment and all-out summer energy. Expect a high-energy outdoor concert, a lively downtown crowd, beverage tents serving beer, wine, and cocktails, and the kind of street party atmosphere that makes summer in Buffalo unforgettable. Friday, August 28th for the District Live Concert Series on Ellicott Street in downtown Buffalo, featuring Nerds Gone Wild. Your ticket includes entry to the live outdoor concert featuring Nerds Gone Wild, access to beverage tents with beer, wine, and cocktails, a lively street party atmosphere in the heart of downtown Buffalo. This event will be on Ellicott Street outside Tapo Restaurant on Friday, August 28th from 6 to 9 p.m. Admission is $10 for general admission, $40 for VIP. Tapo Restaurant will be offering full-service dinner throughout the evening for guests who want to pair the show with a full dining experience. 2026 Back to School Health and Safety. This is a story by Deputy County Executive Lisa Camara. As a former educator, I know this is a time of year full of excitement. Let me be one of the first to welcome our students, teachers, faculty, and staff back to school. The start of a school year is the most critical in setting students up for success. In Erie County, we have several resources that support the well-being of our young people. The Erie County Department of Health, along with the Office of Health Equity, offers the Children and Youth with Special Healthcare Needs Program. Reintroduced in 2023, the CYS-HCN program is free for families. It offers resources and referrals that will improve care coordination for infants, children, and youth from birth to 21 years of age who have a serious or chronic medical, physical, behavioral, emotional, or developmental condition. A diagnosis is not required. Families will be matched with community resources to provide advocacy to healthcare providers and school districts. To apply or learn more, visit erie.gov/CYSHCN or call 716-858-1920 or email healthequity@erie.gov. Anyone with questions about their child's eligibility is encouraged to call. Another great resource for students and families is Erie Path, the county's mental health-focused smartphone app. Erie Path helps parents and caregivers understand the challenges that children and adolescents face, such as feelings of anxiety and depression, alcohol and drug use, and symptoms or behaviors that indicate a mental health condition. Most importantly, the app includes links to local support services. For more information, including download instructions, visit erie.gov/eriepath. I also remind everyone that September is National Preparedness Month. This annual campaign reminds residents to develop plans to mitigate risks and respond to emergencies and disaster situations. Families can involve children in making sure you are ready to handle the most common types of emergencies that you might experience. Talk through scenarios such as what to do if there is a fire inside the home, an extreme weather event that happens when kids are at school, or another emergency that could disrupt your family's life. New York State's Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Services has resources and activities specifically for children. Visit www.dhses.ny.gov/kids for more information. Safety isn't just a school place issue. I remind parents to have conversations with their children about safe transportation to and from school. Erie County's Street Smart campaign has tips for parents and caregivers to discuss safe behavior with students. Walkers and bikers, use crosswalks, helmets, and visibility gear. For bus riders, remind students to cross in front of the bus, stay alert at stops, and follow driver instructions. For new drivers, make sure you have your safe driving habits reinforced, have good awareness of school zones, and avoidance of any distractions. In school zones and parking lots, practice caution during drop-off and pickup, obey posted speed limits, and watch for pedestrians. I wish all Erie County a happy, healthy, and safe start to the 2026-2027 school year. Again, that was written by Deputy County Executive Lisa Camara. You have been listening to a reading of articles and features from Buffalo Rising. We read from Buffalo Rising on Fridays at 8:30 a.m. Your reader has been Jim Michaeli. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service with broadcast studios at 1199 Harlem Road in Cheektowaga. Radio readings are broadcast 24 hours a day, every day, to area people who are blind or have a print disability. This year, our agency marks almost 40 years on the air with more than 300,000 hours of radio readings to those without sight. Our broadcast signal is provided at no charge by WNED. The Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service website is nfradioreading.org. For more information, call 716-821-5555. Good morning. Welcome to another broadcast day on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, a private, not-for-profit organization. As always, please feel free to contact us with your comments, suggestions, or questions, and stay with us. Arena Buffalo News is coming up now. Thank you. program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading